Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Ruth Wallisoff, and we're talking with Eileen Carina, who is the president of the Pulse Center for Patient Safety, Education, and Advocacy. And what's coming out of the conversation, and it's so amazing, is we all have to question. I mean, years ago, you went to the doctor and he gave you something. You went home and nobody even questioned. But at the time, you probably had St. Joseph's aspirin and something else and Bayer. And that was basically today with the thousands of drugs. And with, honestly, I don't think anybody's still knowing the implications of interactions of different ones because they probably haven't mixed them all together yet, that you do need somebody that, you know, I have a pain in my elbow. You have a pain here, you have a pain there. I give you four different things. And you're making a lethal concoction, and especially for a senior who may be taking them at the wrong time, maybe you shouldn't take them together. And you read all these things, take with milk, take with water,
right,
don't drink,
right,
don't drive,
right,
you know,
right.
That.
It can be very confusing.
Oh, it's very, very, it's terrible.
Very confusing, especially for a senior.
That's why that course, you know, again, all these things are wonderful, but as this population ages, you know, there's almost a job for some sort of a advocate. That you would call them up and pay them $100 and say, mommy's going to the doctor today, would you please go? I know you're trained, and well, therefore you could ask, like, wait a minute, A and B doesn't mix.
Right, there are professional
patient
advocates.
Oh, there are?
Oh,
I had no idea. Okay.
Absolutely.
Where does one find
them? We're hoping, to, as we move along, we're putting on our website if people have taken our training and want to do this.
Could you give your website address?
Sure.
And repeat it,
yes,
please.
It's Pulse Center for Patient Safety.org. It's spelled out, P-U-L-S-E, Center for Patient Safety.org. And people would take our training. After they take our training, we are committed to working with them for as long as they need us. So if people want to shadow me to the hospital, I will call somebody who wants to be trained as long as they sign off on privacy and the forms. And I will shadow them if they decide. The fact is, though, that an advocate, there's different kinds of advocates. There's billing advocates, there's patient advocates, there's nurse advocates. We don't do any clinical services at all. So the idea would be is that if you want to be a nurse advocate or somebody.
What do you mean by clinical? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm not a nurse or a medical professional. So I can't give advice on what is appropriate care and what's not.
I get you. Okay.
Which is what we want. We ask nurses who come to our training to get rid of their clinical hat because it's about the patient. It's not about what the nurse wants. And when I'm in a relationship with a patient as their advocate, my goal is to make sure the patient and their clinician, their doctor or nurse, has the relationship. I'm just an outsider looking in and helping them understand each other. I have to be objective. As an advocate, I have to be objective. But there's no actual certificate, professional certificate saying that somebody is an advocate. There's no licensing. There's no actual credentials. So if anybody can call themselves a patient advocate, and that's across the country. There are schools now. There's training. There's programs. But in reality, anyone can actually say I'm a patient advocate.
Okay.
I understand that John Hopkins has a course online where one can get a master's degree in patient safety and healthcare quality. Are you familiar with that course?
I am, and there's a few different schools that have online. And my training actually comes from the American Hospital Association and National Patient Safety Foundation, my work as a fellow in that program, plus the years of experience and the work I've done on other boards, patient safety boards. So, again, my credentials, you know, I'm definitely not credentialed the way somebody else might be. I can't call myself a nurse or a medical professional.
Right,
but if I have the services, because my focus is on safety, as our organization is, then that's what people would want to use us for. And they only call us if there's a reason to step in. And sometimes it means being able to go to the nurse's station and ask for the director of nursing to have a conversation with the patient and to open up that communication. So the training, there is training. I've been trained in mediation a couple of times, medical mediation. So there's a lot of different trainings that come with our course and our experience.
I'm going to mention this this organization to the director of our social center in Great Neck, because maybe they would want to sponsor you giving this course.
Great. And the idea would be is a lot of
it's
people
It's a senior
say,
center.
That's great. And we would want to work with their adult children, not just the people who need these services. We want to work with people who are going to be the advocate, because it's really important. So if I could say, yeah, I could be an advocate, who's going to be my advocate?
Right.
I have to start thinking about it. You may be able to speak up for your family member, but who's going to speak up for you?
I am well aware of that.
Now, the shame of it is that's the age group, say like 55 to 65, 70, whatever it's going to be, because the parent is between 85 and 100 today. That's the hardest. I'm finding that's the hardest group to get motivated. You know, like I do events for different stuff. I'm a financial advisor. I do events. The senior comes. But to get the adult child who is...
Do you think that's a case of denial?
I have no idea why it is. Like, okay, but it's so important because the parent is trying to get things organized. Then all of a sudden, mom or dad gets sick and she's the second partner. There's no will, some of these people. It's the most amazing thing. And yet, the 60-year-old should be sitting down and say, Ma, Dad, we got to go through this. You got to sit down. You have to have a healthcare proxy. You have to... It's not happening.
And we actually talked over 18. Over 18, we have, you know, a sign that 18 years old. My son was in a car accident. I couldn't call. He was out of town. I couldn't speak to anyone at the hospital. He now carries his proxy in his wallet.
Okay.
And I can call now and speak with him.
That was event-driven. Unfortunately.
Exactly. But this is where we're getting the information.
Right.
Our advanced directive brochure says how to speak to advanced directives and young people, because a lot of children that we worked with on developing a brochure was people who knew somebody who was in a car accident, knew somebody who was sick and mm-hmm. needed someone. Mm-hmm. And a healthcare proxy is not about death and dying. A healthcare proxy is about when you can't speak for yourself.
Right.
And which is
right.
very different than an advocate, by the way. An advocate could speak for you when you can't speak for yourself. And that's
an advocate is almost going to discuss with you.
Exactly.
Say, you sure you want to do that, Eileen? And you say, I understand it.
Exactly.
I want to do it. You sure?
An advocate is a partner.
Right.
A healthcare proxy.
Right, a partner. That's good.
Right. And the advocate should know who the proxy is, should know the insurance,
right.
should know information. But they don't need to know more than the patient wants them to know, because they're not in their business as much.
Do you find that the HIPAA law can be just self-destructive to the care of a patient?
I would ask that every healthcare professional stops using the word HIPAA. Because most of them don't know what it's about. Privacy is very different than HIPAA. HIPAA is a very, and I really try to stay away from the HIPAA because it's so controversial. But it could become, a doctor can decide if a family member needs to know information. They could make that decision, and that's part of HIPAA, that they could
choose. I don't think people know that.
They don't know that. And that's we've had speakers come and speak about just about HIPAA. And that's one of the things. A doctor could use their judgment if a family member needs to know and there's something happening and they want to have this conversation. Should they talk about it in the hallway or the elevator? No, there is some privacy. But privacy and HIPAA are very different. And if we start telling patients, for your privacy... We understand that much better than using words like HIPAA. Acronyms, words that we don't understand, we have to get rid of that.
Right.
So using HIPAA is a cover, because when I hear a clerk on the phone saying to a family member, I can't tell you that because of HIPAA, I ask them, could you show me where that says that? And they don't know.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, they have
no clue.
I think
that people should do that.
For privacy, I don't want to talk about my patient because I want to respect their privacy. Everyone understands that.
Right.
I believe everyone understands that. But when you start throwing HIPAA, that's just another way of talking over people's heads. We don't know what you're talking about. You're in the radio business. I don't know anything what's going on in this room. I trust you to help me understand.
Right.
And we have to trust each other to understand.
Now, can a doctor also give that information to a friend if someone doesn't have a family?
It's absolutely their discretion. If it's life-saving, if it's urgent, if they need to know something, if they need to share this information, they could make that decision. So it's a case-by-case, and I want to respect, you know, that I'm not an expert on HIPAA, but I do know that if information is needed and we want to give the doctors and nurses an opportunity. Do I want somebody at my bedside visiting me from out of town having my business? No, I really don't. And that's also, you know, understanding that there's privacy and there's HIPAA information. So, you know, it's a case by case.
I remember years ago when I was a teenager, perhaps, my grandparent was ill. And I was able to call the doctor and get information about my grandparent. And I thought that was wonderful. I think information is very important.
Yeah, it depends, though, because it depends on why it's needed. You know, if you were estranged from a family member, you know, I've worked with families that when I found out that there was, very complicated cases where there are problems in families and they want information
probably
to use
true.
Against them. So to understand that, again, it's the doctor may not tell you this, or I may not want my parent or my family member to know my business. I have to be able to trust right. that information is not going to get. Even though I love and adore them, I don't want them in my business.
I think if you went back 50, 60, 70 years ago, it was a simpler world.
It was a much
now,
simpler world.
Now, all of a
world.
Sudden, just say, person's married, but one of the issues he has is AIDS. How did it just come about? And yada, yada, yada. And now you wouldn't want kids. And I mean, it really was simpler.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everything wasn't divulged, and I don't need it divulged. If you're in a bed and not being able to, you know, so there's a part of the privacy part that I see, you know,
right.
very clearly.
And it really needs to be case by case.
Yes,
we have
exactly.
to be respectful that there's no overall
I think that's been very important.
Yeah, and that's why we're individuals, and that's why we need our advocates, and we need to be able to speak up. There's a term called patient-centered care. It's about the patient in the bed, the patient that's there in front of us. That's what we need to be concentrating on, not all the other information that goes on, you know, around them.
What else can be done to avoid lab mistakes or pharmaceutical errors? Or other errors? Is there anything?
Well, again,
or specimen collections?
Again, it's being aware, checking the ID band. Remember, they're supposed to be asking your name and birthday every single time they see the patient. They're with the patient. Labeling, check the labeling on the specimen. Make sure, like you said, make sure that you're supposed to be getting this test. It's all about the patient being part of it. I try to compare it to I wear a seatbelt, not because I'm a bad driver, because I don't know what's going to happen on the road. And I have all these signs and all these warnings that we're aware of that in the hospital bed, we just don't know.
Right.
We have to make people aware of what the healthcare professional is supposed to be doing so that we can become a true partner, because they want what's best for the patient too.
And I think the patient and the family or friend or neighbor, if the patient doesn't have a family, should not be intimidated by the staff at the hospital. I think that's a very important point.
Yeah, and in our training, we practice a lot, and we talk about that because it is intimidating. And how do you really ask a doctor to wash their hands? They've gone to school for so
right.
many years. They're wearing this white coat. They're getting paid all this money, and they're standing over us, but they didn't wash their hands.
How do I tell you the segment is over? Same way. It's hard. It's hard, but it has to be done. This was wonderful. Eileen, Karina, thank you so much for being with us today. You're listening to Senior Talk Radio on 88.1 FM. We'll be right back.